Hello and welcome back to another episode of We Knows Parenting. I'm Peter McNerney.
I'm Beth Newell.
We are married and we have children. Our children are two and almost four.
So close.
We're so close. The week in review, Beth. I don't know if you remember in our last episode, we talked about a family vacation coming up. And we said, I think at certain points, we said, this will definitely be the most stress-free vacation we've ever had.
I don't think I said that.
I said it, and you agreed.
I said it would be less stressful than previous family reunions because of the location.
Yeah, okay. How'd we do?
It was much better.
Yeah.
It was, our kids are older. They're a little easier. Bryn kind of learned how to swim with floaties on.
That was, to me, the greatest victory of the week, was he loves the water.
Yeah. It was a real lesson in Bryn's learning style, which I think we've discussed. But he just, much like you, does not respond to direction, does not want to hear any guidelines as to how swimming works. He just wants to get in the water, choke on a lot of water, learn through the process.
He's an experiential learner.
Yeah.
I'm definitely that way, where if you explain it to me, yeah, that's interesting, but it's abstract. Until I have an experience to relate it to, it's passing through me. So I got to jump in and I got to fail.
Ironically, you love to explain it back to the person who was trying to explain it to you in the first place.
Oh my gosh. You know what? Wow, that's true. I think that's me. That's me being proud of myself for understanding and wanting to share. But I've never, it's insane to me. I've never thought about that, of how insane that is.
Really maddening to try to do anything with you.
Wow. Once I thought I had myself all figured out. But yeah, I did try to teach him. I was like, here's how to use your arms. And I let go of that pretty quick, and I realized, like, oh, just let him figure it out. Like, you're not going to teach him how to do laps. He fell in love with the water, and he figured out his own little funny doggy paddle, and he swallowed a lot of water. And just letting him, I think I was more comfortable just letting him swallow lake water than you were.
Yeah, well, it's a real test of control issues and trying not to have kids hurt themselves. Mm-hmm. And there's so many times in parenting where I have to be like, okay, they're going to hurt themselves, and I just have to be okay with the fact that at least they're not going to die doing this.
I think we both learned a lesson in that lake. And mine was that like, just let him do it his own way. And you were a little, him, like, especially coughing on things, you were like, are you grabbing him? And then you would let go of that.
But there were times when, like, if I was grabbing him, he's wearing this, I guess they call it, like, a puddle jumper.
It's like arm floaties with a chest piece.
Yeah.
So he's not going under.
So it's like, it doesn't automatically keep his head above water. He has to make some effort to do that. So there's times where he'd be choking and then sort of, like, his head is, like, going to fall back underwater. So I would grab him by the chest of the puddle jumper and lift upward so that I knew his face was not going back in the water while he was choking. And you would grab him by the arm and just pull him towards you, which doesn't have any, like, upward, out-of-water effort behind it.
I understand the concern, but I was certainly pulling him up first.
I don't know.
There's but
I,
the real solution
you,
was...
You jumped in the water and splashed waves in his face, and he was choking, and this is someone who just learned how to swim with floaties, like, an hour ago.
The thing is, whenever he would get water in his face, and I think the solution was us both leaving him alone.
I know, but I calmed down when I saw him learn to process it, and you had no concerns from the beginning about splashing water into your kid's face.
Well,
while
again,
he was joking.
In the end, I was right, because that's how he learned.
Okay.
I mean, I wasn't trying to get water in his face. I did do a big dumb splash at one point.
I'm just saying, I think having no concern for your kid's safety is not necessarily, like, the best method. I'm saying we're meeting somewhere in the middle and it worked out.
Yes, yes. I don't have no concern, but I do have less concern. From your perspective, I totally understand why it feels that way. But yeah, it ended up great. And he was in the water every single day for a week. And by the end, I wanted him to be able to I was trying to get him to jump in the water and be okay with his head going under, but I let go of that battle too.
Well, he did do it once, and he was such a strong mixture of proud and like, I'm never doing that again.
Yeah, so whenever he would swallow water, we would both, it would seem terrible. He's like, oh, we're like, oh no, do you want to get out? He's like, no, I want to swim.
Yeah.
And he was fine. So that was great.
Very dramatic.
The house was much less dangerous. And yeah, I mean, we were on top of things, but so were other people because there was less to be worried about. And like, they weren't going off a cliff.
For some reason, talking about that just reminded me of when we were at my parents' house a couple weeks ago eating ice cream cake, and someone asked him if he was getting full, if he was too full and didn't want any more, while he was mid-eating this piece of ice cream cake that he was obsessed with, and he accidentally said, yeah, I'm full. And then he tried to recover really quickly, realizing he said the wrong thing because he didn't want his ice cream cake taken away, and he was like, I'm very hungry. And it was the funniest, realest moment.
It's like literally watching somebody for the very first time try to lie so blatantly. It's like, it's fast. We obviously, as adults, you've had a lot of years to learn some tact.
It was just the misspeaking and the trying to recover, I think, that was so funny.
But, well, I gotta say, my favorite part of the trip was when the four of us were out in the lawn, and I don't know how it started. Probably Bryn, who likes to dictate how to play. You be this and you say this. But he made us switch roles in our lives. And he played Daddy, and Maven played Mommy, and I played Bryn, and you played Maven. And I found what then followed to be incredibly illuminating and hilarious.
Yeah, it was funny seeing him. He's like a pretty committed improviser. And I think one of the funnier moments, he was like walking around playing you very confidently. And then at one point I said, Daddy, why aren't you wearing any pants? Because he loves to walk around in his underwear. And he was like, and then he just changed the subject. He couldn't. He was like, let's go to school. He's also, it was really funny because like immediately in this role playing game, Maven and Bryn's thing was that they were trying to get us to go to school, which is such an ongoing morning battle we have with them. It's just like,
yeah,
we have to get you out the door. And so it's so funny that they picked that as the role play.
I mean, that's a big part of our relationship is me telling them to do things very directly. And I was, in the end, I was very happy with how I was portrayed. Because there was a lot of like, got to do this, got to do that. But there was no anger or like overly sternness. He was just, they both played just these like confident, I'm telling what you do because that's what parents do. But my favorite part was when we pretended to get upset and I started crying and I started doing what Bryn does, which is that like, I'm being disagreeable and I don't like this. No, I don't want to. I don't want to go to school. And my favorite moment was when he just gets still and he looks at me and he goes, it's okay to be sad. And I was like, wow, Bryn, that was some great parenting.
Yeah. And Maven just repeats everything he says. My impression of Maven was just like, you wearing a shirt? You wearing a shirt? That's your shirt? She just loves to ask them. She asks the most obvious questions all the time. I know this is like a toddler thing, but she goes, you mommy? Your mommy?
Yeah, I think there's something that obviously feels great about validation.
I know things. I love the idea that she constantly just wants to confirm, like, you're my mommy, right?
Jade, real quick. Oh, wow, this reminds me of, you've heard this, I think, but this is a little bit of a tangent, but my favorite story of my cousin, Ben, when he was little, we grew up very close to our cousins and they had four kids. We had four kids. And so my mom was giving my older brother, Andrew, and my cousin, Ben, a bath. And they were probably six, maybe, and they're getting, maybe younger, I don't know. They're getting undressed and getting in the tub. And Ben, who's a very serious, like quiet, introverted kid, is about to take off his underwear. And he stops and he looks at my mom and he just goes, you see my penis, right? And she said, yes. He goes, oh, okay. And then he gets in.
Yeah, he probably just had like a stern lecture from his pediatrician or something about who gets to see your penis.
A stern lecture from your pediatrician?
Did you not have that talk with your pediatrician?
No. Dr. Bagown never talked about that.
Oh, I feel like that was an ongoing thing of like them, because they have to like, you know, look at you and examine intimate parts of your body. And I feel like they constantly want to remind you at the pediatrician, like, this is not okay normal. But this should not be something that's happening to you.
I wonder if that's a gender difference. Do you think girls get that talk more than boys?
I don't know, because my pediatrician was very weird towards me for certain gender reasons. Like, he would always, every single visit, would tell me how pretty I was, and then he would tell me to say thank you for his compliment.
What?
Which was just so condescending, and the older I get, the more insane it seems to me. But it was just, like, acceptable misogyny those days.
That's insane. I mean, that would be totally insane right now.
I would hope so. I don't think it was not on my mom's radar, because it was just so normal in those days for people to be like, you should be very grateful that someone finds you attractive.
That's bizarre. I mean, yeah, if 10, even 10 years ago.
But I'm sure he thought he was doing a great thing, because I'm sure he said that to every little girl that came in all day, every day. And he was like, look at me building up these girls' confidence or something.
Yeah.
Anyway.
How was he old?
I mean,
when you're little, everyone's old, I guess.
Yeah, he was a grown up. He's older than my mom.
I have this very fond memory of our pediatrician, Dr. Bagown, but I don't really remember much. I think he just had a great playroom, and we all had him, and he was very quiet and got the job done. And just what a name. I'll tell you what, I've done a lot of improv shows where if I have to be a doctor, Dr. Bagown is the first thing that pops into my head. And it sounds like a fake name, doesn't it? Bagown?
It sounds like a real name.
Bagown.
Anyway, that story about Ben reminded me of that video you posted while we were on vacation of Bryn getting mad at me for something random, like telling him he couldn't do something. And then he kept saying, I'm not going to be friends with anyone at school. And that was his weird...
That's his revenge for you not helping him with something.
Yeah.
I'm not going to... It's so dramatic. I'm not going to be friends with anyone at school. And then his slump shoulder, fast walk away.
It's just the perfect metaphor for how whenever any of us are getting angry, we're just punishing ourselves.
Yes, go to my Instagram, MICNEN, and check out what we're talking about. It's very funny, I promise. At the very end of that, I go, that makes sense. And then he goes, it doesn't make sense! I don't think he knows what that means.
No, he was just trying to be disagreeable about everything we said.
It doesn't make sense! Now it's time for We Knows Wins. This is where we talk about some successes we've had in parenting as of late. Beth, you have something you feel good about.
So I want to talk about Bryn's birthday, which is...
Coming up!
It's coming up fast. As usual, this is sort of like a abstract win, but I think something about my parenting struggle is that I am a perfectionist and I would like things to be perfect, and that's impossible with children. And so I'm learning balance and how I'm learning how to put in an appropriate amount of effort towards events that makes me feel not insane, but also makes me feel accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
So for Bryn's birthday, I think we've talked about this, where like for the last couple birthdays for our kids, we've done almost nothing because they're little and they don't know. But he's getting to this point where he does understand, and Maven just had a birthday, so now he kind of has expectations.
And you crushed it with those unicorn cupcakes.
Yeah. So originally the plan was like, let's make cupcakes for Bryn, make things even. But he requested cow cupcakes for some reason, and I thought that was just an arbitrary thing on his part, but he remembered it a couple months later, and he's still remembering it. Still keeps saying cow cupcakes. So I did some online research. None of the cow designs look easy to accomplish, and the thing with decorating cupcakes in a specific way is you then have to buy a lot of materials and plan it out, and it takes time and energy, and it's the the money starts racking up where you think you're saving money by doing something yourself, and then all of a sudden you spent like $80 on like pieces of candy and stuff.
Yeah.
So I decided, let's just have someone else figure this out for us and hire someone. And so he's not getting cupcakes, but he's going to get a cow birthday cake, which I sent you to the cake store.
This was also a brave thing you did, which is you entrusted me to get this done.
And this is the thing for me where I'm trying to learn to not care about these details.
And you know what? You're not going to love this cow cake.
I think the joy of not having to do any of it myself will lower my expectations.
You also may never see this cake, which might be the best. I walked into the cake store and I was like, I want to order a cake for a 4-year-old's birthday party or some cupcakes. She's like, all right, cake, what do you want on it? I'm like, he wants a cow. And then she looked at me, then like, what do you mean?
That's so fun.
And I was like, I assume this is normal, and then you have follow-up questions. And then I suddenly felt so dumb. And then we went through it, and she's like, what kind? And I was like, well, I guess I hadn't really thought about it. So I'm like, now I'm designing a cow cake in my head. I'm like, I guess just if it's a cake, we can just put the face, like a cartoon cow face on the cake and write happy birthday, Bryn. And she goes, okay, just a face? I'm like, I guess. And she goes, what kind of cow? And I was like, you know, just like white, brown spots. And then she goes, you mean black spots? With the most judgmental look. Like,
she's the one that asked you, like, she didn't understand what a cow looks like.
Well, she was just like, cows have black spots, you idiot. So I go on my, now I'm like, I'm getting on my phone and I Google brown spotted cow. And then I show her a picture of a brown spotted cow.
So now you're arguing with her over the color. Why didn't you just relent and, like, does it matter?
Well, I mean, Well, she just treated me like I was so dumb. I was like, I just don't want you to think I'm dumb. Look, this is a picture of a brown spotted cow. And then she goes, so do you want that on the cake? And it's a stock photograph of cow. And I'm like, no.
This is what happens when you try to mansplain cows to someone.
No. So then I realized, I assumed that this would be a place where they're like, how about this? Instead, she was just like, tell me exactly what you want. And so then I was like, okay. So then I start looking at pictures of cows, and I quickly then just Google brown cow cartoon. And then there's just a bunch of like cartoon cows.
I would have just Googled cow cake and given her the most simple to execute cake.
Yeah. Well, I expected somebody with some expertise to be asking me questions. Instead, I quickly found a cartoon cow.
I emailed it to them.
And then she goes, what colors do you want? I'm like, cow colors. So I guess like maybe white frosting, and the cow can be white with brown spots. And then the decorations can be sort of like brown, orange, yellow. Sort of fall colors. That's what I think when I think cow.
You think of fall? It's not August.
Not fall, but the colors of a brown spotted cow.
I can't wait to see this cake. This is going to be insane.
Orange, brown, yellow.
It's a kid's birthday. It's just like blue background with a cow on it.
This might be the best cake ever. See, this is exactly why it is great.
How much are we paying for this cake?
There's the thing. I did the whole thing. They're like, we can have it by then. But somebody will call you about the price. I was like,
they're doing like a mural of fall foliage is going to run us like $80.
No. I made it clear that I wanted very simple.
Okay.
They're going to call me. And
well,
if it's really expensive.
10 colors.
10 colors. I said orange. I said orange, white, orange and brown. And then I was like, maybe a little yellow. And then the cake itself is going to be vanilla cake with chocolate, ice frosting in the middle, so that when you cut it, it's like a white and brown cow.
I can't believe you insisted on brown spots.
Well, she was so judgmental, Beth. Cows don't have brown spots. Yes, they do.
But they also have black spots.
I know, but the judgment, I don't want to be wrong.
Oh,
and
God.
I proved her right. By the way, a black and white cake, I think, is a little less dynamic than some textured browns and oranges.
I can't wait to see this.
I should have just asked her to
make
the whole...
You've turned my win into a loss. Anyway.
The only thing you're upset about is the logic I used for the design choices. If she had said, like, brown and white, and I'd said, yeah, you'd think this was great.
No, but this is, like, every argument you and I get into about, like, how to hang a shelf or something is you try to mansplain these arbitrary truths that you've come up with that don't serve the greater ease and execution of the project.
This is a big stretch.
No, it's not.
The result of the cake will be the same.
It'll be fine. I'm just saying, when you are hiring someone to do something for you, you could give it to them in a more simple way that won't rack up the costs.
No. This is exactly what I was trying to do. And she was helpless. And I realized later, she just needs to get enough information to give to the person that's actually doing this. And she had zero agency to be like, oh, here's what we do. Here's what works,
okay,
what doesn't.
Okay, but when she said, you mean white and black, you could have been like, sure, white and black.
Well, she didn't say that. She said something like, cows aren't brown. I was like,
iconically, in terms of what a four-year-old is picturing a cow to look like, he is picturing black and white.
Well, you don't know that.
I do know that, because every representation of a cow he's seen has probably been black and white.
I think you're in her camp. I don't, when I think of a cow, I think brown spots.
I am in her camp, because she's like, what are you asking for here? A simple cow or something you're imagining?
I was asking for a simple cow, made it. This is the dumbest argument we have ever had.
No, it's not. It's emblematic of every argument we have.
I stand by this 100%. I was trying to make it simple, and she treated me like I was insane. And so then I had to design the whole cake.
This is exactly like when I was giving our kids half and half mixed with water so that they wouldn't have a screaming tantrum.
We talked about this last week.
And you want to mansplainy point out that it's technically not milk and just cause disruption just so that you can be
the
right.
The last time you did that, last week, literally, I did not do that.
Okay, but I'm just saying this is a constant pattern where your needing to be right comes above
the
greater good.
I took the note, but not in this case. This woman made me design a whole cake, and I did a great job. Anyway, I came home, and Bryn brought it up again. It was my birthday. Am I going to get a cow cake? And I smiled and I said, you just might, Brent. You might get a cow cake at school. And then he made an additional request.
Uh-oh.
And he goes, can the cow be fighting a unicorn?
Wow, this is like some sort of need to defeat Maven's birthday.
And I wanted so badly, because I thought it was so funny, like a cow and a unicorn in battle, to like talk about it and like joke about it. But I was like, I can't let you fall in love with that image, because now you're going to hate your cow cake. But to your original point,
I mean, when they call you, you could ask for that and see what they say.
Yeah, maybe.
Because I honestly would love to see that image on a cake now.
That would be great.
I don't want to let this kid constantly promote violence, but that's a funny cake.
I mean, I just picture them both sort of on their hind legs with their hooves up.
Yeah.
Like a coat of arms type of pose.
It's like that Discovery Channel, like, shark versus alligator thing. Like,
yeah.
Who would win? Who would win?
Oh, gosh, maybe I will. If I'm talking to the actual designer.
Well, that's the thing. It sounds like this woman was kind of useless. And when you talk to the person who's actually going to execute it, they'll probably be like, oh, yeah, fine.
Yeah.
Whatever you want.
I mean, I just kept saying, she asked me more questions. Originally, I was like, he's four. It doesn't matter. He just wants a cow.
It's a cow cake.
A cow on the cake.
Not complicated. The other aspects of this birthday that I think are, again, this nice need for balance is, I don't want to spend a lot of money on him again, because he's still not quite old enough to really appreciate things. So instead of ordering him one of the many like $1 billion Lego sets that are all Star Wars for some reason, I found this $20 off-brand set of Lego people that is a variety of just random generic looking people, and we ordered it came in the mail yesterday, and None of these people are assembled. So it's like, how many people? 40?
At least.
There's a lot of people.
Every hand, every arm, every leg, every pelvis, every torso, head, and hair are separated.
I still think worth it, and the price was amazing.
Well, it's easy for you to say who built three of them, and I built all the rest.
You wanted to. This is exactly the kind of project you love.
You're right, but boy, my fingers are messed up. Okay. Like, this is great. We got what we paid for.
Here's what I love about this is that we don't have a million Legos, and I think he really mostly just wants to play with the people, not the Legos.
Yeah, he is old enough to, I want to get him some just like generic Lego pieces because we started to play with those and build stuff, but not instructions.
I don't want to spend money on Lego pieces because one, they're so overpriced, and two, I'm pretty sure we have family who is just begging to give us like 10 million Lego pieces if we are willing to ask for them.
Yeah. I love Legos so much, Beth. You have no idea.
This is a phase of parenting I'm not looking forward to because I really don't want to have a house covered in Legos. But
you got to get trays. My mom has it all figured out. She has designated Lego play areas, and they have trays with these little ledges. So you don't lose any. They don't end up on the floor. Or if they are on the floor, there's a big blanket for them. And she's had a lifetime of Lego maintenance.
This is actually something my mom had on vacation that my aunt gave her, which is these rubber mats.
Yeah, those
that
are cool.
Trays. They're like very flexible. Her idea was that kids could paint on them and spill paint, whatever, and it doesn't run off. But she actually bought them at the pet store, and they're rubber.
They're for dog food bowls.
Yeah,
they're
for like cat and dog food bowls, and it's just like a rubber mat so that stuff doesn't spill everywhere. And
Mason might as well be a puppy when it comes to eating.
All kids are puppies, I think. Yeah.
So we haven't decided what we're actually going to do for his birthday, but we have daycare cake covered. We have some presents.
We also ordered on eBay a plastic dinosaur from the 1980s to match the one he has from your childhood, which they're both featured in the book he loves, What the Dinosaurs Did at School. And
do you know how selfish I am?
You thought it was for you when I ordered it?
Yeah, and I thought it was the most thoughtful gift you'd ever given me.
You're insane.
I know. I didn't think that you actually got it for me. But when I saw it, I felt an incredible emotional reaction of this. That was one of my favorite toys ever. These big, dumb dinosaurs.
Again, a balancing because he's been reading this book and he knows that he has one of the dinosaurs from it, which is kind of bizarre because it's a dinosaur from the 1980s.
It's like knowing a celebrity.
Yeah. And so he points at the book and says he wants the other ones. And it's almost impossible to find them online on eBay. Or like you could. The thing is, I could order like five mismatched 1980s dinosaurs for like $140, which is insane. Yeah. And only one or two of them would be actually from the book.
Well, I know another one is still at my mom's house, so we'll have to just go steal it.
Which one?
The Stegosaurus.
Oh, yeah. That one's really hard to find online.
All right, we got to grab that. If you know what we're talking about, you know what? Maybe this will be the picture for this week's episode is the dinosaurs.
It's a very specific brand of 1980s toy dinosaurs called Dorme. And if you look up that brand or more recent plastic dinosaurs, they don't tend to make them as big as that.
Yeah, that's what's so great about them. There's just a huge plastic dinosaur. I want it.
Anyway, we now have two. So,
well, someday.
Someday we'll have all the dinosaurs.
Happy birthday, Bryn. This next segment is called Did You Knows? And for the first time ever, we're going to learn something from Beth.
Yes.
Beth learned something and she took the fact-telling.
Well, thank you for saying that as if it's so rare for me to learn something.
That's what I was implying is that you're so dumb.
It's
you don't
just
know
that
things.
You love mansplaining so much and
you
I've
let
just
me.
Ceded that territory to you. Mm-hmm. But not today. So my cousin sent me this article and it's from the British Psychological Society Research Digest.
Juicy.
And she sent it to me actually because there's a picture of a girl that looks remarkably like Maven with her. She's standing on her mom with her arms crossed. And it reminded her of the video on our Instagram where Maven says big fat booty and steps on Brynn's butt.
She's stepping on the mom like Captain Morgan does.
Yeah.
One foot.
So That's why she sent it, but it's actually a really interesting article. And the title of the article is How Kids Shape Their Parents' Parenting Style.
Mm.
And this is like remarkably sort of like the thesis of what I imagine my parenting style to be, which is no style. Because the first sentence, the first two sentences here are, in our culture, we like to speculate about the effects of different parenting styles on children. A lot of this debate is wasted breath. And the point of this article is like, they did these studies to figure out whether, you know, parenting styles are having an effect on the kid or whether the kid is having an effect on the parent's parenting style based on their general nature. And so they compared sets of identical twins versus fraternal twins in how the parents parented them. And what they found is that a lot of our parenting is actually in response to the specific nature of our kid. And I think that's so interesting because when you read it, they make this point in the article, it's sort of like they say a lot of parents know implicitly that no matter how much you try to train yourself to follow these like specific parenting guidelines of like being incredibly patient and following specific sets of rules, at certain points, it's just so much easier said than done with certain kids in certain moments, depending on their behavior and their stubbornness and et cetera.
Absolutely.
And I think it's very true when you look at our two kids. I mean, they're both difficult in their own ways, but they're, at a certain level, you just have to improvise.
This is what I've been saying recently, is that, you know, there's value to hearing about how other people do things and patterns that have been successful for them. But you have to keep in mind, it's successful for them and their child. Everyone is just figuring out how to parent the child they have.
Right. And I do think there's certain like core truths to a lot of them. And like there are probably, they're probably for the most part effective in most situations, whatever. But I do think also like sometimes certain methods are really effective at one age and then your kid hits a certain age and then it's just like totally useless. So I think the danger is to like read one parenting book and follow it like it's the Bible, I think.
It's when they're really little, it's every 3 months, it's a totally different human being. And you have to refigure out most things, it feels like.
And then the thing with parenting literature is like they'll develop these like methods and things that are like week to week specific about how your kid will change and grow and how like how those things will change, and they map it to a certain extent. It is true and helpful, but at the same time, again, you can't predict any one kid and how they're going to hit those benchmarks at such a specific time. So
like everything, I relate this back to being an improv teacher where I'm trying to get a bunch of adults to learn a very specific skill. And there's a lot of things I've learned over the years that if I make everyone do this, they're more likely to learn the core lesson than not. But I also know that people are going to react to it differently because they are different people. And everyone needs a slightly different approach to achieve the same goal.
Right.
Because no one's coming from the same place.
Different people are motivated in different ways. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure if we were teaching Maven how to swim 2 years from now, she would respond to the instructions of doggy paddling because I think she picks up on things like that from other people and she likes those cues. And Bryn doesn't want to hear it.
Yeah,
he also is much more of a performer like you instead of a observer.
Yeah.
And so when I told him, when I tried to explain to him how to doggy paddle, instead of doing it, he started barking like a dog in the water.
You know what? I think that probably helped him more than anything I told him. I was like, reach and then pull is the, like, pretend you're a dog. You know, and then he saw that dog. What were there at one point?
Oh, yeah, he did see that dog.
A very old dog swam across the entire lake to bring us a stick to throw.
There was a Swedish man who lived across the lake.
He was Swiss.
Swiss. His name was Bruno, I think.
Yeah.
He's like old. He looked like a Werner Herzog character.
And sounded like one.
And he had a big dog that swam across the lake and was bothering us in a nice way.
They called Bruno. Bruno came down. He's the Swiss caretaker that just lives in the woods by himself. And he comes down and gets on his raft, which is built on top of three surfboards. It has the tiniest outboard motor I've ever seen attached to a car battery.
The raft was insane. It was like if you took like a wooden dock that was like many, many years old and it had moss growing all along the edges of it. It was like...
It'd been there for a while.
It felt like in Lord of the Rings when the Ents come to life and then you just see this like mossy old thing moving and you're like, this is not supposed to be moving. That's supposed to stay in place.
I thought you were going to talk about Buckleberry Ferry.
No. Not the reference for you, nerds. But it just, it didn't look like that was something that should be moving across the lake towards us. It was like a, a decrepit, moldy...
It was shocking. And he got across and he goes, I did not expect the motor to work. It's been out for all year.
He said, this is the first time I've taken it out this year. Yeah. And it was like, it was August. So.
Well, yeah. I don't think he goes swimming a lot.
No. My aunt told me that he said that he likes to have his friends over to smoke pot on the weekends.
That is not surprising.
No. I wish I could have spent more time with him.
So we are parenting the only way our kids will let us, which is in reaction to them.
It's a hodgepodge of effort and non-effort. This next segment is called Would You Knows. This is where one of our listeners posits a hypothetical parenting situation for us. And for the first time this week, we have a voicemail recording that we're going to play for you.
Hi, this is Nicholas from Brooklyn, and I have a Would You Knows. So let's say that you and your family are either out on the beach or maybe in like a cornfield in the middle of Iowa. Point is, you're all alone. It's just your family there. And all of a sudden in the sky, there's a huge burst of light and these magnificent aliens arrive and you're certain they're real aliens. There's no way that special effects could capture this, the incredible majesty of it all. It's incredible. You're just like, wow, these are real aliens. And the aliens step out of their ship and they approach you and they are able to communicate with you and they say, hey, so we just discovered that there is an apocalyptic meteor heading for Earth and we have two extra spots on our ship. We're going to take your kids. Is that cool with you? We could take you guys, but you wouldn't want to leave your kids to die here on this scary, scary planet. There's not a lot of time. I guess my question is, and it seems like they know what they're talking about. These are very nice aliens. Any question you ask them generally lines up with, we're aliens. We know everything, and we're super smart. So would you let your kids go on the spaceship alone with these aliens, thinking that maybe you would be saving their lives? Or would you say, oh, no, aliens, that's okay. We're all going to go kaboom together. Let me know. All right, bye.
Wow.
My favorite part of all of that is just how in love Nicholas seems to be with these aliens. They're majestic. They're trustworthy. I want to be friends with these aliens.
He paints a picture of them as fairly trustworthy, but I'm still having a hard time.
You're still having a hard time trusting them, aren't you?
Yeah. In the movie, ideal version of this story, this origin story for some human who lives in space, we would hand over our kids. But in reality, I think that'd be nearly impossible to do.
I mean, he's making a really strong point that at the end of the discussion, we believe their logic. And we believe that we're going to die and only two people can live.
He does paint a really positive picture of them because if they're evil aliens, wouldn't they just try to wrestle our kids from us and not ask our permission?
Well, they're not evil. They're just...
I know.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, in the scenario where we're trying to figure out if they're evil or not, like...
So I would trust them. You'd be like, yeah, if you have this much technology, you could just take them.
I think...
Here's the question for me is, okay, so maybe we give up our two kids, but is this going to be... In my mind, I'm going, should I send these two kids away or should I send you and one of our kids...
Whoa.
So that person, because them just like suddenly being around aliens And like, that's their whole life. Is that traumatizing or is that going to be normalized? Do they need a person that understands them to be with them so that their life is not complete misery? What are their, what are these aliens' parenting styles, or would these aliens adjust their parenting styles?
I mean, I could see why they would want our kids and not one of us, because if you're like going out of your way to take in a human being and support them, you want them probably to learn about your culture and grow up in it and accept it as normal and not like constantly be like questioning it. The same way, like, if you learn a foreign language at a young age, it's going to be much easier for you than like trying to learn it at 30. Like,
yeah, well,
if one of us goes, we're just dead weight to these aliens. Like, they're just like, oh God.
Or no, like then now they have someone to take care of that child that they picked up. Because, like, they don't know how the child works.
I don't know. I don't think it's, like, that hard to keep a human being alive.
What do these aliens take Brynn and Maven to their planet, and they're like, here's lunch, and it's poison, and they're dead. And if you have a parent there to be like, hey, what's in this? Humans can't eat all things.
I don't know. You're giving yourself a lot of credit to be able to look at alien food and tell if it's poison or not.
Well, I'd have the sense to ask, what is this?
You're not a chemist. Well, do you know what the chemical compounds are of poison versus alien food? And you think they could read you off a sheet of
the
all
point
the
is,
components?
You or I could at
no,
least...
No, we're dead weight.
We could
don't
at least
understand.
Wonder. We would... We're best positioned to take care of our children in that situation.
No, I don't think so.
Well, I mean...
If it was a baby, if it's like a... maybe even a one-year-old, I can understand why I'm valuable to have there for emotional support, et cetera.
Breastfeeding.
At the current age, I don't, like, yeah, it's going to be traumatic, but kids survive.
It's true, true. Kids are designed to withstand, to deal with trauma more than they are sometimes given credit for.
As long as these aliens understand affection to some degree and like have some sort of empathy, which I think they do if they're coming to save our
kids. I
mean,
they're magnificent aliens. Majestic, thoughtful, caring, and patient. It sounds like they're patient. They took a lot of questions. Yeah. So in my mind, they're like just zooming by the planet and they're like, oh, crap, look at that meteor. Maybe we could save some people while we're right here. And they go down. Yeah. And they're like, we can save two. We got seats for two.
I'm still having a hard time trusting them. And this is unfortunately just reminding me of these ICE situations where a lot of times they, because they didn't want to have like a traumatic scene, they would tell these immigrant moms like, oh, we're just going to take your kid over here for a second. And we just need you to sign this thing that signs your rights away, and everything's gonna be fine, and they like barely speak English, and they think they basically think they're just like entering the country with some degree of like whatever. So
I don't think I feel much closer to these aliens, and I trust them more than ICE agents.
Oh, for sure.
So I think the question,
they're definitely smarter.
I mean if the planet's gonna blow up, I think the core question is, of course, I would let my children live. I wouldn't keep them here and have us all die.
I really don't think in the moment, though, you would make that choice.
That is unknowable.
I think it's very
possible we just be like, no, there's got to be a way. I don't believe you. I don't trust you. But if there was enough time to face the fact that that truly was the choice we were making.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, I think it's human nature to like act out of fear and make the bad choice.
Yeah.
And like, it's like so many people when there's like a hurricane coming and they have a chance to evacuate and they're like, I'm not leaving my house. And it's like, what are you doing? Like, but that's how we are. Like,
you just made that idiot Southern. What does that say about you, elite East Coaster?
That hurricanes are more likely to happen in the South.
All right. Good answer. I accept it.
But I mean, our scuba instructor did this in the Cayman Islands. He stayed
in
the South during a hurricane, and he regretted it.
Yeah.
But
that's
I think
another whole story.
Anyway, but like
Nick, we would give the aliens our kids if we were calm enough to think through it. And if we were emotional, dumb animals, like we probably are, we might make the wrong choice. We don't know, Nicholas. So why don't you take your aliens you love so much And why don't you go with them? That's what we do. We'd say, you know what? We're not going to go, but our friend Nick would love to go. Thank you, Nick. That was Would You Knows? This has been another episode of We Knows Parenting. If you would like to reach out and tell us about your parenting stories, questions, would you knows, you can email us at weknowspod@gmail.com, or you can leave us a voicemail at 347-384-7396. You can find that number also on our website, weknowsparenting.com. While you're there, why not check out our new merch store? You can get a t-shirt, We Knows Parenting. You can get a I'm a Handsome Mommy t-shirt or an I'm a Beautiful Fart Daddy t-shirt.
Yeah, and more stuff is coming.
Yeah, so keep an eye on that. Beth, what do you want to plug?
I wanted to plug something totally unrelated to the podcast, which is a friend of the podcast, Guy Branum's book is out. It's called My Life as a Goddess, and I'm really enjoying it.
You seem to really love this book. Like, I want to read it, but you literally are holding it every time.
No,
I'm
just
home.
Finished. You can go. Read it.
Well, I shall begin. Well, that'll do it for us. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook at We Knows Pod. That's it. Beth, you want to say goodbye?
Bye.
Bye.